Welcome, everyone, to the Crit Raid podcast for Wednesday, March 27th, the day before my birthday. This is episode 85. I'm your host, Justin Skirbo, and today I'm joined by Liz Caetano.
What's up?
I'm also joined by Justin Chow.
Hello.
And returning to the podcast, oh my God, it's Alex Shock.
What's up?
What's happening?
He's back.
This is weird.
This is weird. We're all digital right now. Hopefully our audio sounds good. Maybe better. Who knows? Let's shoot for the stars. We're going for better.
If it's better, man.
It is nice to have you all here. Alex, it's been a while, man. Have you still been playing games? Do you even like this stuff anymore?
It's been like 3 months. It's so strange not to be on this and just like, I see your chats going about games and stuff. It's like, I just want to talk in person about, I mean, huge games have come out. Well, one huge game has come out. And yeah, I haven't really had a chance to talk to you guys outside of just bits and pieces or here and there. And yeah, that's hard. That's been really hard for me. So,
well, I was gonna say we have
great to see you guys.
This consistent weekly friend group where it's like we would always just be able to kind of unload all of our thoughts on a weekly basis of like, you know, because we're all like keeping our ear to the ground with news and playing stuff. It's like, where does all that information go? This is where it goes. We have to unload it here.
I mean, not to mention, you know, we catch up on personal life stuff, too. And it's just, you know, it's been a strange separation of, you know, being up here in Vermont.
True that.
With the cows.
Have you been good with the cold? Are you changing on, like, a molecular or cellular level? Like,
I think that is how it works.
I mean, I'm pretty sure
adjusting to the weather.
I will say that it's kind of fun. Just like snowboarding or anything, really, like having the right gear feels kind of cool. Like when you have the boots that don't have laces on them and you can just trudge through the snow and you're wearing all the right layers, you know, it doesn't bother you as much and you just feel like, I can handle this.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where I've been. And having the muck boots, they're just like big rubber laceless boots. You can just plow through snow, puddles, cow poop. It's like, it's great, and they just wash off. So, yeah, it's awesome.
We saw you 5 days ago, and you had hair.
Yeah.
I feel like if it's cold up there, why would you get rid of that gear?
Dude, the hair is so annoying. Because I'm wearing a hat. It's like you want to put the hat on, take the hat off, put the hat on, take the hat off. But it just mats all of your stuff up. And my hair is thin enough now where it just like looks awful, and it feels terrible. So I just got rid of it. It's like
you're very lucky that your skull shape is good. It's round.
You speak from experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have a weird skull shape, Justin?
I mean, this is a big problem.
I could never go bald.
This is a big problem for Jason too, is that he doesn't have a good head.
He's losing hair.
He says he's like, I don't know what I'm gonna do. I'm like,
you own it.
We're just gonna get through it.
We're gonna get through it together.
We're gonna get through it together.
You're like, what are you gonna do? What am I gonna do? I've got to be seen with this weird head. Oh my gosh.
You know, I did come up here though without knowing whether the Wi-Fi would be acceptable. It was a really big gamble, so I don't know what I would have done. Right now I'm on Wi-Fi and it's working fine. And yeah, I've been able to game and everything, but that was a pretty huge shot in the dark.
Yeah, you just
would have had to play video games single player. You wouldn't be able to talk to anybody.
I couldn't download. What would I do? Go to the GameStop that's 30 minutes away? I don't know what I would have done.
And buy Disc Space games. You'd be like our friend Shane out in Yellowknife, Canada.
Yellowknife,
where he takes the pilgrimage down to the local Blockbuster so we can play the hottest
every game you buy. You need to.
Yeah,
download
so
some kind of patch to it anyway, so it's true. Not wouldn't be helpful anyway.
You would have to go back to Jersey just to download those updates and then go back up to Vermont.
I knew I would have Wi-Fi, but whether it was good enough to run all the stuff I have going on here, like,
yo,
I bet you
there's someone that's crazy enough that they'll like ship their console to a friend, download all the updates to all their games, and then ship it back to them.
By that point, there's probably a new update out.
That's a good point. Yeah, it's interesting that you were saying you were playing on Wi-Fi, because like we were playing Helldivers and whatnot, and it didn't seem like it was affecting it that much.
I think I benefit from not many people are actually on the Wi-Fi here. So I think I just have direct access and it's just me just clogging the bandwidth with all the stuff that I have going on. Amazing. But yeah, it's actually, I mean, it's surprisingly fast.
Awesome. Very cool. Has there been anything game-wise that's been occupying most of your attention outside of Helldivers?
It's really been the big guys. It's been Final Fantasy and it's been Helldivers. Oh, and yeah. I've been eyeballing Dragon's Dogma, but I just don't have the capacity for that right now. And I'm looking ahead to the months ahead, and there's really not, I mean, maybe you guys, there's something that I'm missing here, but there's not a lot coming out over the next, like, through June. There's like
Stellar
Blade. Elden Ring DLC.
Stellar Blade comes out in 2 weeks. Stoked on that.
Did you want to play Ronin? I know we were talking about that for a while.
It seemed interesting. I just read the article title, and I've been, this kind of summarizes it pretty well, but I've heard other games reviewed like this too, but it's like, Rise of the Ronin is the best open world RPG of 2013. It's like, like, that's pretty rough. That's a rough take, and that's kind of what I'm hearing.
I will say that when you guys were really excited about it and we were watching it, I did feel a little of, not necessarily the 13, but like, I don't know why I wasn't so excited about it. And I kind of, I don't know.
The excitement that I was kind of presenting for was more like wishful thinking, right? It's like new IP from Koei Tecmo, you know,
right?
PlayStation, you know, second party PlayStation title. It's like, it had the opportunity to be something really interesting, but I think nobody really knew anything too intimately about it until after it came out. And yeah, it seems like it's like fine. Like, it seems like it's fine. But like, when you're coming out alongside Final Fantasy VII, Helldivers, Unicorn Overlord, you know, all this stuff, it's pretty easy to get outshadowed. Is that the word?
Outshined.
Yeah.
The opposite.
Overshadowed.
Yeah. Overshadowed.
Overshadowed.
There it is.
That's it. That's it.
Something still not right. Yeah.
How about everybody else?
Yeah. I mean, I'm gonna play it, I think.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm gonna knock all those. It's, I mean, the reviews I've seen have been like, you know, it's like a open world Ubisoft game where there's lots of stuff to take off.
Liz is like,
and you're like, yes. check and check.
Sign me up. Though I might take a break in between Final Fantasy VII and that, because I'm feeling that on Final Fantasy VII real hard, and I'm actually getting pretty tired of it, honestly.
Well, it's long. I think we've all basically hit this point where it's just like, oh my god, how long have we been playing this game? You know, it's been like over.
Yeah, just like, I want to, like, I'm worried years? That the I'm worried the story is gonna get spoiled, because I feel like I keep seeing articles online, and I'm like taking too long to finish it, to the like the point where now I'm in like danger zone of other people are gonna finish before me and start talking about it. So
where it's like,
I just made the decision today. Like, I was like, you know what? There's stuff to do in that area, but I'm not interested, and I'm just gonna choose happiness. I'm just gonna choose joy, and this doesn't bring me joy. So,
wow. I mean, I hear that.
I'm gonna keep moving.
It's funny because like, you can definitely chart the highs and the lows pretty obviously, I don't know. They're just, it's very obvious noticeably. That the highs and the lows are just when you hit an open world section, it's at its lowest.
Yeah.
It's at its lowest. Mm-hmm. And like, I think I got to the point where I'm at the story where it's just like from the very beginning, it's like high, low, low, high, 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 low, high. And then it's just like, low, 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 low. I'm just like bum rushing that. It's like, after I get to the next area, I'm just like,
The thing that kills me is like that it requires like at least 10 to 20% of my actual attention all the time. Because like, even when I'm like, okay, let me just get into open world mode and just like knock out some of these checkboxes and just do these things, it's like when I get to those things, somebody's saying something. So it's like, now I got to pause the podcast that I'm listening to or whatever, because I want to absorb the things that they're saying. And the things that they're saying are interesting most of the time. But it's like, that'll happen for, you know, 15 seconds. And then, okay, now I unpause the podcast, go back, you know, get back on my chocobo, figure something else out. It's a whole thing.
Man,
I do want to give my take on this, but Chow, do you want to talk about... You're the one that has to talk about what we're talking about, what you're playing. That's what I meant to say.
Oh. Well, I'm just playing Final Fantasy. Like, people ask me to play Baldur's Gate, people on this podcast specifically, and I'm like,
meeting
I'm
us,
sorry.
Yeah.
I need to.
We played last week, and you're like, oh, we got to play again. Let's play Monday. Every Monday from now on.
I mean, we're all like,
you were the one. You set the date, and then we're standing there. Got jilted.
Understand, but there's this is just a thing that I need to just. I need to be done with this. Like, I mean, I've spent so much time, and it's eating into my nights where I'm like playing to like 1 or 2, and then I'm waking up at like 6:37, and I'm like, I can't go on like this. I need this to be done.
Yeah, I mean, we've all got to be pretty close at this point. I'm under the impression that we're almost all in the same spot, and I have to imagine that there's like less than 20% of the game left. Like, there has to be.
Yeah, I'm feeling that too. I would just say this one new gripe that I have. I mean, I have been loving the story, but we don't have to retell that over and over again. But it's when a game that you're 70 hours into, me personally, introduces another mini game that requires an entire new tutorial of like 5 to 6 pages.
I know exactly the game you're talking about too.
And I'm just like, it's not worth it. I don't want to do this.
Yeah.
I don't want to do this.
It's funny because like when that happened, I just had this like hard exhale. I'm just like,
yeah.
Okay, I'm just gonna like learn this and just fucking beast through it as fast as I can. Like, but there was a moment of just like, really, game? Like, really? Yeah, like, did we not do the thing already? Fuck.
I'm like, I mean, I think I echo a lot of this, and the fucking mini games, man. It's just not for me. There's just too many. Even through the beginning of the game, it's just like. Every single little side quest has like its own little tutorial. I'm like, I'm throwing a box with a string attached to it to get chickens to follow me. I'm like, yeah. What am I doing?
Yeah,
why am I doing this?
That one, I'm glad didn't overstay its welcome. Box.
It's a stupid
mini game.
It teased you with overstaying its welcome.
Yeah.
It's like, oh man, we're a long way from the
food. You thought you were going to have to walk that freaking box all the way back to town. I feel like the game knew. I was just like, I quit. I'm going to put this game down. I'm never going to pick back up.
Yeah, I was close. I was about to be like, I don't know if I can do it. You're testing me, game.
Nope.
It really is. I know you guys have talked a lot about this over the past couple weeks, but like the open world stuff, definite negative. And it's like, I'm trying to just fill up. I just want to fill up all those little stupid circles. You know, I want to get through them all. But then it's like you get to a little town that has a side quest, and that has 8 parts where you need to go fetch quests and find Johnny's whatever, you know? Like,
dude, it's so funny.
It's just endless fetch quests and mini games and just like open world shenanigans. And then it sucks. It's just not fun, but it paired with this awesome everything else. But God damn, that takes a long time.
Yeah, it's funny because I feel like there's so many times where it, like, in the area that I was just in, I finished the last dot, right? The whole line of dots, and I finished the last dot, and I was like, yes! Like, I'm done! I can finally do the next thing! And then I open up the map, and it's like, there's 2 more side quests on the notice board in this town, and I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, I was like, just get me out of here! Like, come on!
There's sometimes where you, like, Coral... you can't complete
Corel.
Like I know I'm saying it wrong because it's like anyway there's like 2 that you can't do until like a later chapter, so you just have to leave it.
Yeah,
and it just feels it feels so awful.
Yeah,
like I'm doing something wrong. It's like just let me clean it up, you know, or just make it a different section or something.
Like, I don't know. Where how far along are you, Alex? I'm just curious because I don't know if we're all like pacing in the same like place.
I'm in, is it Gonzaga? Gungaga?
Gungaga.
What's that place called?
Gungaga.
Yeah. So I'm there.
That area sucks. Like, it's just not fun to walk around that area at
so,
all.
That's where I quit, because I was like, I couldn't find the places I needed to find. And like,
the elevation.
I was like, am I really going to look up a tutorial of like the literally fucking... how to get somewhere?
You know what's so
how
funny?
How to get to a combat mission that I don't even want to do.
That, yeah. That, like, so I'm just gonna, I like, had a moment with that where it's like, I went on Google and I searched how to get to, and then I inputted like one thing and like 3 videos came up. So I was like, all you motherfuckers don't know how to get to this place. Like,
and it's like, and I wanted to try to get to one of those towers that was like up on a ledge.
Yeah.
And the game tries to show you, it has like a pathing system, but it just shows you running up the wall. It's like, it just goes up the wall. You're like, this doesn't work for me. I just have to figure out, you're just bouncing around in your stupid.
Yeah.
So
yeah, you have to go so far to find the mushrooms to get to that one. It's so far from where you start.
The pacing is so different from the first game, and it definitely at its detriment. So I am very much struggling with all of that stuff, but really enjoying like everything else. I mean, story, characters, the battle system, like I have maybe little gripes here and there, but I think largely that's like really awesome and feels good. But it's just so at the end of all these long hauls, and then you just have to start all over again when you get to a new area, that it's like, it's painful.
Yeah. I mean, to Justin's point before, I think this game really does chart between low lows and really high highs. Cause it's like when you're in like a prime story beat, or like being introduced to a new area, or like when a new song plays when you enter a new area, it's like, yes, like this is what makes this worth it. Right. But then when you've heard the same open world song for 10 hours and you're like, and you're just trying to like get to where you're trying to get to, it's just like, come on, man. Like
the Gungaga one has like little children like laughing in the, I'm like, I can't listen to this. I can't do it.
The Gungaga was when I found out that you can input your Spotify account into PlayStation, and then
you're a smart man.
Yeah.
It is fantastic.
See, that's when you Final Fantasy 15 it and just listen to the calm lands as you walk around that world.
Yeah.
You know.
Dude, anything would be better.
Yeah. So, interesting stuff. I mean, I'll tell you what. I met one of my friends for lunch today, and he actually completely bypassed Rebirth. He's like, "No, I just wanted to play Unicorn Overlord first." Like he was really about it. And he came back today. He was just like, he's like, dude, I was like so hooked by that game. He's like, it was 40 hours and it was amazing. He's like, every single step of the way was awesome. And I was like, fuck, man. Like, I want that. Like, I want that feeling. Because right now I'm in my 70th hour of this game. And I could honestly say that like 30% of this has been really not good. And then the other like 70% has been excellent. You know?
Right.
I think I might do Unicorn Overlord before Dragon's Dogma as the spacer game.
Yeah,
I think that's a good call. And good things.
Yeah, I want to give a lot of breathing room to Dragon's Dogma, because it seems like the biggest problems that game has right now are all technical. And I'm like, that seems that's like fair. The kind of stuff that could get patched at some point. So I'm like, let me just like give that as much room as it needs, you know?
And I'm not really that worried about spoilers when it comes down to Dragon's Dogma. Totally. But like, I don't know, man. Something about like 30 frames. Like I jumped on Final Fantasy VII Rebirth's like performance mode, and like the difference between 30 and 60 is pretty drastic. I don't know if I can. I don't know if I want to play. I was like definitely feeling sick on 30 at certain points.
Yeah. Did you guys actually check out the new update that came to Final Fantasy VII, where they added like the smooth and sharp modes?
No.
Yeah, so in this last week, they added a patch to the game that improves the graphics for performance mode. So we talked about this last week, where if you're running it in performance mode, it's like there are certain times where the game looks really soft, like specifically in the menus, like the characters' faces just look very, very soft.
They're like checkered.
Yeah, but they added this mode where now when you're in performance mode, there's two selections between what, like, they call it soft and sharp. And sharp, I'm of the opinion that I think it helps, like, it's like a 10% improvement. It's not crazy, but it does make it look slightly better, like noticeably better, I'd say. So
I'm sitting like 10 feet away AI. From a 65-inch television. I feel like I can't tell. But yeah, sorry, Liz, what were you saying?
Should they just use like AI and to improve the contrast?
Or something. I'm not sure what, like, how they described it, but it was just... Yeah, they said, so in the patch notes, patch 1.020, it says addition of sharp and soft option for graphical output on performance mode. It doesn't say anything else about it. But I don't know. When I switched between them, I could tell a difference in the menu, and I haven't really noticed it outside of it, which makes me think that it's good enough to just be good, you know? Mm. So that's a nice
thing. Cool. I'll check it out.
How was that slight transition into news? Was that pretty good?
That was great.
Beautiful. Did you even see it happen?
Fantastic.
All right, let's keep diving
in. Nobody else is... Yeah.
Go ahead.
Nope. Go. Let's.
All right, we'll keep diving into news. In the... as we're talking about Final Fantasy stuff, we got an update from Final Fantasy 16 about its newest expansion coming out, The Rising Tide. Did you guys see about this?
No.
So it was originally announced at the Game Awards alongside the first expansion pack, which the name escapes me right now. But the rising tide is obviously the inclusion of the Leviathan icon and that whole story. And this DLC seems to be pretty substantial. So it's $20. It comes out April 18th. And just the quick bullet points of what's in this. So they're adding brand new characters to the game, new boss fights, an entire Jill story arc. So we can actually learn who Jill is and what's going on with her. It says the whole DLC takes place before the final chapter of the game. So it's like, it's intended to be canon. There's a new area called Mysidia that you're going to. They raise the level cap to 60. And then if you're playing in Final Fantasy mode, it raises the level cap to 110. There's a new icon, which is Leviathan, which is pretty cool. There's also going to be other icons that they don't reveal yet. They're including Tonberries into the game, which was my biggest gripe originally, was that there was no Tonberries, no Cactars. Like, what the hell? And then,
no joy.
Right? And then they're adding a end game mode, like a basically like a wave based like challenge fight mode that has 20 stages, and that's like to play through after the game. And then alongside of that, they added an update to the game that's coming out with it, where they're fixing the quest sequencing, where after you finish a quest in the world map, it'll give you the option to immediately teleport back to the quest giver. So it'll kind of like streamline the game that way, which is kind of cool. It's adding a new skill set feature, which I think is like creating profiles, like if you want like different types of like loadouts with your icons. You can totally you can totally customize the button layout. They're adding a photo mode, and they're adding a bunch more of those like music roles. So pretty substantial stuff coming to Final Fantasy 16. I feel like I would actually go back and play this DLC. It seems significant enough. And it also felt like a big tease in the first game that they like talk about Leviathan and then just kind of like move past it, you know?
Yeah, we knew that was coming, the DLC for Leviathan specifically. Yeah.
Same thing like they did on Final Fantasy 15 with all the disappearing friends.
Yeah.
If I haven't beaten Final Fantasy 16 yet, I didn't plan to before June.
Jesus, I forgot about that.
I forgot.
Yeah, I know. Hear me out.
Oh my god.
I lost steam after a while, but like Justin and I are going to go see Final Fantasy 16's, you know, music.
Yeah, we're going to the orchestra.
Concert. Yeah. So I have to beat that game before June. Should I wait? But when's the DLC coming out? Do we have a date?
April 18th, so 3 weeks.
Should I? Yeah, I mean, I wonder if the DLC would just take. Would you just jump into it when it's supposed to come in to the storyline?
That's how they're pitching it. Yeah, I mean, after you beat the game, it's like it does like a whole like save the game, and you can keep playing right before the final boss type thing. So I imagine that's where it would slot the DLC in. But yeah, I mean, it sounds like the entire experience is going to be vastly improved by this DLC. So I would probably get that and wait for it to come out before continuing. Okay. Even just those base improvements, like going back to the quest givers and stuff, that's going to streamline a lot of the game.
What, how much does it cost?
$20.
Do we know?
It's interesting because both of these games, 16 and Rebirth, have similar problems. Like,
yeah.
Story, combat, nailed it. Everything else, it's like, I don't know what people they, you know,
which
they
one of their you at Square Enix?
Like, Square's kind of forgotten how to do that shit. They're living 15
maybe
years
they never
ago.
Knew.
Yeah. I read it as a focus testing problem. I read that as like a, we need this game to appeal to as many people as possible. So what do people like, you know? And then,
but they're not,
I feel like they didn't do enough focus testing.
All these random side quests. Go ahead, Liz.
I think it's more of a cost thing. Like, I think because I feel like this happens actually in games a lot now, is that they make big games like this, make them as big as possible, and they try to, you know, shoehorn in as much as they can, especially in the open world. And I think it's a product of, like, games cost so much to make, and adding those things are probably cheap. Mm. And so if you're going to charge someone so much for a game, they feel like you need to, like, do all this extra stuff, and they're trying to, like, get as much in there for as little effort as they can.
Yeah.
to justify charging so much to the consumer and to justify how much it's costing to their investors.
Yeah. I mean,
they have to stand by this game to somebody. And I just feel like if people made smaller games, they would end up being cheaper. And
better.
Maybe it would help with everybody, you know, with the entire industry being laid off right now.
Yeah, I will say that, like, there have been many times while I'm playing Rebirth that I'm like, dollar per value, that equation, like, time in game versus the amount of money you spend on this game, like, the value that you're getting out of Final Fantasy VII is absolutely insane. Like, this is a lot of game for $70. You know what I mean?
Like, but do I need to spend 30 minutes chasing dogs around to go pick up an ore?
I didn't say quality. Value, I said, you know? Value. Like, if but we're, val- but if I, the yeah. equation is time to dollars.
Time, yes. Value, questionable.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, value, quality plays
in. Is that
value.
Ratio high? Is that, like, yes.
I would even say that, like, it's, I'm of the mind that the highs of Final Fantasy VII are still worth it. Like, if we were not engaged in the side content, I imagine the game would be significantly more enjoyable.
Oh, like, totally. And like, I think it's still a good game, but it's exactly the same thing with Final Fantasy XVI. Like, I love all the stuff, but it knocks it down. Like, it can't help but be dragged down a little bit.
This might be a hot take.
It's
but
easy to forget the highs when you're, like, I feel like I did that 12 hours ago. I played a whole game since I had my last cutscene. So, like, I almost don't, like, it. The high, like, fades because of that time.
Yeah.
And then when I'm back in it, every time I'm back in it, I'm like, this game is great. And then 12 hours later, I'm like, I'm beating my head against the wall.
Yeah. I will say, this might sound like a hot take. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Justin.
No, I want to hear your hot take first, because I also have a...
I was going to say,
the take is cooling off. It's got to still be hot.
My hot take.
It's taking too long.
I think the boss fights were actually way better in 16 than in Rebirth. I think the boss fights were probably the strongest piece of that game. And, like, I still remember how I was feeling during those fights. And I haven't had that feeling in Rebirth. Rebirth is different stuff. It's more nostalgia. It's more, like, cool. But 16, I was like, God damn. Like, this is awesome. You know?
They did that right with the music. I mean, everything tied in so well in that game.
That's what I mean. Like, so when I look at this DLC and they're saying, like, multiple new boss fights, I'm like, yeah. Like, I want that. You know? Yeah.
I will say the only time that I've... Okay, so two things. The first thing is the only time that I felt that level, like Final Fantasy 16's boss fights, that cinematic beautiful, like choreography, I don't know what you want to call it, like those scenes. The only time that I've actually felt that is like by wholeheartedly trying to manufacture that by keeping everybody's limit at the top till I get all of them and then have them all go at the same time. And like... click through each character as they're going through the fight just to make it look super cinematic. I know I've done that and I've saved those videos to watch later. Second thing is I want to ask though, is there anything particular that you think they could have added to the open world areas and taken out? Let's say we just wipe out the entire open area situation right now. What, you know, like what would you want in an open area that would add to the story and make the game and the open world aspect of the game better? I have my own thoughts, but, like, what would you guys think?
Like, if we sculpted the open world?
I mean,
I want an actual open world. Like, I want to be running around and discovering things. You know, like, discovering Gungaga or, you know, Corel or, like, these different towns. Like, if I want it to feel more connected. And then you fill in the blanks with, like, you know, little caves or, you know, just, like, I don't know, more discovering stuff. Like, this is like a fake open world where you're just dropped into this large area and they fill it with crap. And then there's a city. You know, there's one town at the top or whatever. And you're just kind of connected to this big wide open space that they just have a bunch of side quests in.
So yeah.
That doesn't feel like the right way to do that for me.
To that point, even in the original FF7, it's like the first time you have access to the open world, it's like you really do have some freedom to walk around. It's like, maybe you like you do just happen upon the Chocobo farm, you happen upon you know, the whatever it's named, the Midgar Zalem Lake. You know, you could go to the beach and you're fighting different things by the beach line or by the coastline. Like there's definitely some of that to it. So I hear you. I think that would make sense.
Yeah. I think you need less stuff and better rewards for doing the side stuff. Like, I don't like those tiny yellow ticks That doesn't make me feel good. No, I'm not happy seeing that I've done 5 things and I've only like 10%.
I didn't know you can empty circles.
I didn't know
you could build in guilt and shame into a game, Square Enix.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm gonna tell you, they're really trying to shame me into finishing that level, and I really had to talk myself down from that.
Yeah.
Just like, I'm not buying into your empty circles. They're just pixels on a screen. I can keep moving.
You're a stronger person than me. Who wants to go first? Which Justin?
The one thing that I would like, if I was to distill all of my favorite moments in the game, it is primarily all of the story stuff, right? But really what it comes down to is the interactions between the characters. And honestly, like, it does, like, the game has gotten to the, or at least I've gotten to the point where all the characters do feel like they actually like each other. And it's, like, fun to learn more about them. You know what I'm not getting? I'm not getting a lot of the relationships between the characters. So if I was to say, if I was to have the open world as, like, an avenue to serve me something different other than the main storyline, it would be small little either side quests that really bring out the relationships between all the characters, and then I would search out for those specific things.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, I would love to know
it's so true. Because anytime you do get those bits, I'm like, oh man, this feels great.
Right?
Like, yeah. I want that. I want to know. And also, like, it's really trying to cultivate a feeling of, like, especially when you're playing, like, a big, you know, party game like that, of, like, we're this ragtag group of adventurers, and, like, you know, we're relying on each other, we're moving, we're having this grand adventure together. But I don't always feel that. Like, with Kate Sith, what are you doing there?
Boy. Yeah. Right? Or, like, I want to know
who
more
are you
about,
friends
like,
with? How did you end up here?
What's Barret's relationship with Red? Like, do they talk amongst themselves? Like, how is that? Like, that would be nice to know and at least feel a little bit more of these connections.
I feel like the first game did that well. Like, I feel like they were...
It was definitely a tighter
game,
too.
Yeah. And they did have those moments, and you did feel like that relationship. So maybe it's just a product of there being more characters, and it's harder to do, but...
It's not to say that the characters aren't... Like, I definitely feel like all the characters are friends with each other. Like, they all feel comfortable with each other, and they can say what they want to say to the group. But I feel a lot more understanding between the characters and Cloud more so than any of the characters and themselves. So I would like the story to be about Cloud and, like, you know, his friends with him, and then I would like everything else to be like, give me a little bit more background on everybody else. But
I think just in general, like, the pacing is probably the biggest thing that's taken a hit through the experience so far, where it's like, even at the beginning, it's like there were some lulls. And Justin, I think you described this before, but it was like there was at least enough narrative happening in rapid succession that I was really sort of like gripped through it. And that came in the form of like the weird relationship questions. You know, you get into a new town, you're unraveling pieces of the story, being introduced to new characters pretty rapidly. But I do think that basically once you hit Corel, it really does take a big dive as far as, like, there's just too much going on. And I mentioned this on one of our earlier podcasts where it's like, that was the first time that I stepped into a game and I was like kind of overwhelmed because I was like, there's too many things for me to interact with right now. And then by the time that I, like, got to a point where I felt, like, satiated, like, I was like, okay, I did all the things that I wanted to do, like, 10 plus hours have gone by. And I'm like, where was I even in this story, you know? And it's, like, cool that there are these other smaller story threads going on, like, whatever's going on with the Queen's Blood guy and all this sort of stuff. Like, those kinds of things are nice, I guess, but it's, like, it's not why I'm here, you know?
Right.
So... I don't know. I'm definitely going to see it through. I think the scariest part is by the end of this journey, I'm likely going to go through again on hard. But if it is New Game Plus, then I'll be able to just bypass all of the bullshit. But
that sounds like fun, actually.
Yeah. This is just my sickness, so I'll, you know.
I'll see how I feel. I'll see how I feel.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. Unicorn Overlord looks fucking great.
I've got Unicorn Overlord literally on my XMB. I see it every time I turn my system on. And, like, and it's funny, when I met my friend Dave today, and he was like, dude, it's so good. He's like, every minute of that game was awesome. And I'm like, fuck. Like, oh, I just want that because I don't have that every minute is awesome feeling right now. I have, like, you know, every couple hours there's an awesome moment, but, like, in general, it's just like, okay, like, I feel like we've all probably hit this point where it's like, okay, we're just doing it, you know, like, just.
And I was about to leave Gungaga proper, and it's like, oh, a new side quest has popped up on the board. And the lady's like, can you help me make soup? And I'm like, fuck, I don't, it's like five ingredients. I gotta go, like, run around, sure, and do this shit. I gotta follow this dog to collect.
I was the best you can, because you got to pull those mushrooms up the right way.
I was happy to see Cisne in that game, though. Fucking, do you guys know
who
that is?
I forgot who that was.
I totally forgot.
Yeah, she's like a primary character in Crisis Core. She's like the female, like, lead in Crisis Core.
She's designed interestingly enough that I knew she was some type of main character. Yeah. Like, yeah.
You're someone. People don't just walk around this world looking
this
like
backwater.
That.
Yeah. It's backwater farm place. Yeah. Yeah.
She used to be in Shinra. She, like, assists Zack through, like, the majority of Crisis Core.
Gotcha.
Yeah. She's like, if you remember, she's one of the slot machine people.
Is she really?
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Oh, that's her. Well, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, there's some cool through lines there. All right, let's move on. Next article of news, a little update on GTA 6. Based on a source from Kotaku, it looks like GTA 6 might slip into, their words, could slip to 2026. I guess I don't
good,
really
whatever.
Care. Yeah, like, not a big deal.
It's still forever away.
I think the real connection here, and, like, this is just me sort of, like, spitballing, but I'm under the impression that this game's relevance only becomes most relevant when the PS5 Pro comes out. Like, I think those two entities are going to be pretty married. So, however it shakes out.
PS5 Pro is coming out later this year. And
that's the assumption.
GTA is not going to come out until next year, maybe the following year. So
well,
I
no,
that's pretty.
Yeah. Definitely. There's enough space, yeah.
Right? Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I feel like GTA 6 is, like, it's definitely going to come out on PS5, not Pro. Like,
No, it will. But I have a feeling that it's going to be like, I don't know.
I see what you're saying. Like, it's clearly going to come out as a game that's going to, like, you know, push the limits of what's technically feasible for the console that you have, and you're gonna get the, like, it's gonna be a conversation of, like, getting the best version of that.
You know what
it's
gonna
be
like
on a better console?
It's gonna be like what Horizon Zero Dawn was when it first came out. Like, when Horizon Zero Dawn came out, like, sure, there was a regular base PS4 version, or you could play at 60 FPS on PS4 Pro, you know, and that was a pretty significant difference, and that game, like, really shined on that console. So it's like, you know, I imagine it's going to be something like that, but I don't know. I'm not super invested in GTA 6, so if it gets delayed, it's, like, kind of, you know, whatever.
I mean, I'm looking forward to it.
Like, yeah, 10 years. Like, what's another 2 years?
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I wish they didn't even announce it. I'm sort of at that stage in my gaming career. Just don't tell me. Just
yeah.
I am happy they announced it. I am happy that I got to see what they're playing, like, what they're planning, and I am excited for it. But for all Rockstar games, I have a weird, like, already understanding that it's going to be a good game. And so when it comes out, I mean, they come out so spaced out anyway, it's like, yeah, it really doesn't matter.
I'm excited about it. I just don't want to wait. I don't know. That excitement's not going to last for another two plus years or whatever.
Yeah.
I think my excitement, yeah. Yeah, that's fair.
So next piece of news. Did you guys see the leaked images of the all-digital Series X that they're coming out with?
I did not know.
No.
We're on a computer now, so I can share them with you.
I know. This is kind of awesome.
Yeah. So this is what it looks like. It looks like a white Series X.
Interesting. Cool.
Not really that exciting. Just, you know, it's a new model.
Wow. You sure this isn't just... Fridge? It's just like... Did someone just change the contrast on an image?
Right.
Inverted
it. Yeah, exactly.
And then they just paintbrush tooled over the disc slot. Yeah.
What? I mean, it's a pretty low quality. Oh, wait. I'm not viewing this properly.
Oh, no. If you blow it up, it looks just as bad.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Who's using, like, a flip phone to capture this footage?
Some dude in a factory in China.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, fair. I mean, you're taking and sharing intellectual property, I assume.
Yeah, you're going to do it on as least traceable low-tech
thing. You know what this is? This is a Samsung watch taking a photo. This is exactly what that looks like.
That would make sense.
Yeah, that checks out. That's how you're
going to 4 megapixels or whatever.
Right. This is not impressive. Why are they doing this? It doesn't look interesting. I don't know.
It's the slow moving push towards an all digital future. That's what we're looking at here.
Yeah.
The first comment is that they couldn't make it look more boring.
The funny thing is that the Series S is white. So it's like now you just have two white consoles.
Right.
It's like your Xbox. You're the black box console. The fucking like.
And the S looked good because it had the big black circle on it. At least there's something to break it up. Yeah. But this is just a white square.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I imagine the top's gonna have that, you know, the fan on it, and it's gonna have all those holes.
That's true. You can almost see it.
If the inside color was blue, then it would look like a PlayStation Xbox. You know,
so if the inside color is black, it would provide that contrast.
Not into white consoles overall.
I mean, I'm also hoping that when the PS5 Pro comes out, it doesn't look like a router and is also not white.
Yeah, it's weird though because it's like, okay, so you're making this is the all digital, right? No discs.
Yeah,
like why wouldn't you do something that's thinner? Like, it is literally the same thing without a disc tray. Like, do something more interesting here. I don't understand.
Yeah, what's taking up that space? I mean, that's a good chunk, you know?
Yeah, that is a good chunk. That is a good chunk. I don't know.
It removes the line and makes it white. It removes the disc insertion point and then makes it white. That's silly.
It just sewed the Matrix, like when Neo's mouth gets sewn.
Yes! Oh, my God. Freaks me out.
No. Phil Spencer is just like...
if you had mouth.
Phil Spencer's just like, guys, we don't have money to redesign this, so
just close it up.
He's like, do you have any idea how much we just spent on Activision Blizzard? We don't have money for this redesign. Let's make it happen. All right. Two more stories. Next article of business. There was a new 6v6 team shooter announced called Marvel Rivals. And I have never seen a more Overwatch-looking Overwatch game in my entire life. Did you guys see the trailer or look up any information about Marvel Rivals?
I did watch the trailer. I guess it's third person, so it's a little like Paladins or like, you know, it's close. Mm-hmm. Right. But it felt so much like Overwatch, and it looks so dull.
Yeah, it's got like it's almost like Overwatch meets like Paladins or Smite or something like that, but just like,
wow, it really looks like Overwatch.
It's just mm-hmm. it feels like so late on so many levels because it's like, I don't know, I feel like Overwatch's time has come and gone at this point. And when I look at this, it's like they're clearly trying to bank the appeal on the fact that you're playing as Marvel characters, but something about playing as Marvel characters makes it seem so much more lame.
It's more almost somehow it's more generic somehow.
Yeah.
I think we're past the point where like you can put Marvel characters in something and it's like a cool thing, like Ultimate Alliance or something.
It used to feel like it was like this sort of like underground nerd, like, wow, you know about that too, like niche thing. And now it's like everybody knows about this stuff and it seems like a quick cash grab.
You know what it feels like? Yeah. So here's a good example. It's like when you're a kid and you go to school and like you could get any notebook or you could get the one with Spider-Man on it. And it's like, it's not necessarily cooler that it has Spider-Man because like just one of the options that you could get of a notebook is Spider-Man. And now it's like, that's what this looks like. It's like, you could play any game, or you could play the one with the Spider-Man cover, you know?
Like, I don't know, but I feel like it's working against it now. Like, just like we were saying before, like, you would get the Spider-Man one because it's adding character to your fit, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah. No, I'm kind of thinking that it's more it's like, lame because of that. It's like...
Yeah, no, when, well, now...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe I didn't state my point correctly. But yeah, it's... I don't know.
There was a time where Marvel was cool. Like, that stuff was cool. But now it's just so oversaturated. It's like Iron Man shooting beams. I've seen that shit so many times. Like, yeah. I don't need that anymore.
Yeah. But it's also like, I don't know. There's something very like, I don't know. I feel like I'm not articulating myself well now, but follow me. It just feels very like not punk rock. You know what I mean? It's like you look at this and it's like so like every like generic is the best way to use it. Whereas like if it was a game that had like unique characters, like Overwatch was cool because it allowed you to sort of like learn these new characters and be into like a new thing. This is just like, well, I'm into this thing and now I've got this other thing that's like this thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
This game is a result of data and market research and focus groups from 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And then they're like, oh, I have this file that says that this is a surefire win. And then they're like, let's make it.
Yeah.
And then it takes 3 years to make, and they're like, oh, shit. It's
going to be terrible. But I think it's funny because there's kind of exceptions to this rule, right? Like when Insomniac makes Spider-Man, it's like, Wolverine. That's cool because it's almost like, we know the level of quality that that studio can produce. So it's almost like that precedes the IP that it's about. And that's,
they're adding to the conversation.
Yeah, it's like, that's kind of how I feel about Wolverine, right? It's like, I want to see this like famed legendary game developer make a game, like any game. Yeah. And if you're going to like put it in the context of a dude that stabs people, it's like, okay, like that's fine. But this is like, it's already taking a generic played out genre and then just like slapping this coat of paint on it. And it's like, hey, you know, the genre that's been played, like, exactly to your point, the genre that's been played out for 5 years, you know, well, do you like it now that it's got Iron Man on it? You know,
you know, I would say that there's something there that relates also to like, and let me know if you agree with this, but like Suicide Squad. Like, I feel like when Suicide Squad was coming out, like everybody saw kind of like the you know, microtransaction-y, like, multiplayer, like, kind of game that it was going to come out to be smeared on top of, or smeared with, like, the whole, like, Suicide Squad supervillain become, you know, like, that DC Universe kind of, like, thing. And I feel like it felt generic. And the worst part was it was coming out of a studio that everybody respected.
Yeah. You know? That, like, that was the biggest sin.
But you look at Spider-Man, and you're like, okay. So, like, these guys are doing Spider-Man 2, and you're like, I want to know what you have to say about Spider-Man, which is going to be inherently different than what everybody else has been saying about Spider-Man. But you look at this.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the one difference between that and Suicide Squad is like Insomniac delivered what people were expecting, you know? And it's like Rockstar delivered something that nobody was expecting or wanted. Rocksteady, I'm sorry. Like nobody wanted them to make that game, you know what I mean? Like, so when it came out, it was already,
I mean, people wanted them to make, like, when they said they were gonna make a Suicide Squad game, like,
yes,
like, I love Rocksteady, I'm all for it, but then they made
but a live action
game, but then when the game was bad, like,
yeah,
good games are good, bad games are bad.
Yeah. It's like, if, you know, Insomniac,
like, if you're gonna
came
make
out,
a good Spider-Man game, I'm gonna play it. If you're gonna make a bad Suicide Squad game, I'm not gonna play it. If you make a bad Avengers game, also the last like Marvel group game that came out, I feel like, was Avengers, which did not do very well. So yeah, it's already got sort of that stain working against it.
Yeah, I guess the way that I'm framing it is like, though, like, games can succeed or fail in spite of them being about superheroes. Like, I think I think superheroes are not the selling point, right? Like, to your point,
right,
Spider-Man is just straight up a fun game to play. So it's like, it doesn't matter that it's Spider-Man that makes it cool, right? Like, so when I look at Marvel Rival, and then in the Suicide Squad case, it's like, Suicide Squad, like, the fact that it was about Suicide Squad characters didn't do it any favors. So for it to have that and also be a not fun game is like, yeah, it's a death wish, you know, or it's a death sentence, you know?
But I would say, and let me know if you agree too, like, Suicide Squad, when Rocksteady said they were making a Suicide Squad game, all we thought about was how amazing they made, like, the Arkham games.
Batman.
And then we
were thinking,
right, it would be amazing to see Suicide Squad like that. Like, how would they do that, right? Yep. And so it's like, how are they taking that IP, and then what are they adding to that, like, conversation that makes it particularly Rocksteady unique, you know? And that, I think, but that uniqueness speaks, like, it, again, it's not about it being, like, a Spider-Man game per se. It's about, like, who's making the game and, like, how is it going to be unique, which makes it good because it's different.
Yeah.
And then you have this other stuff that is just derivative and, like, generic, and it's, like, It's sad. It's sad.
You know what the shame is, too? I looked up some reviews about Suicide Squad, and a lot of people acclaimed certain portions of it. Like, when you're in any sort of battle with Batman, you're literally playing, like, the opposite side of an Arkham game. Like, he's doing the Arkham stuff to you, and you're trying to, like, get around the explosive gel and him, like, dive-bombing you off of gargoyles and stuff. And, like, just conceptually, that's cool, you know?
That is cool.
Yeah.
It's but like, for that to just be the sprinkles on this really nasty cake is, like, kind of shitty. You know?
That makes it so much more upsetting. Because, honestly, even when playing the demo, like, watching the cutscenes, I was like, this game could be good. Like, if this game is just a normal game and not this live service, you know, it's just riddled with microtransaction and terrible traversal, like, the cutscenes in it and the humor and the writing and, like, these moments, they could have been, it could have been good.
Yeah.
I think if, like, so, like, if Insomniac came out tomorrow and they were like, we're making a Suicide Squad game, it's like, that would suck, but it's also like, okay, Insomniac, at this point, you've kind of earned that trust.
Yeah. But it's not like I would be hype because of that.
No.
I'd just be like, I'll wait to see it, you know?
But the fact that
it's about Suicide Squad wouldn't make me be like, this is great, you know?
So I'm trying to think about, like, what would make this game more interesting, this Marvel Rivals. Like, if it were Marvel versus DC or something, like, that might be more interesting. Like, there's something so generic, but the way that they did it, it's like, I'm struggling exactly why it's so lame, like, the choices that they made.
I guess the feeling, and I've been trying to kind of put my finger on it as well, and I think as we've talked about this, it's starting to reveal itself, which is like the fact that it's a Marvel superheroes game isn't lifting it at all. So then when you show me a game that already feels kind of generic and played out, like the fact that it's a Marvel game is just like, so what? Like, you know, it's like it's not, you know, doing it anything,
because you can do it right. Like Marvel Midnight Suns was a cool, like, that was actually a really good game, but that wasn't just, I mean, I guess that did have all the Marvel characters, but it was really, it was a little bit
more
focused.
But it was
focused.
More like, it was, hey, like, this is a narrative-based XCOM style sort of thing. And it's like, to Liz's point, good games are good, you know?
Good games are good.
Guardians of the Galaxy, good game.
Good game.
That was all right. It was better than bad. It was better than bad. All right.
It was on the right side of 7 out of 10.
So exactly right. Exactly right.
No, I liked it more than that, but...
It was definitely funnier than it had any right to be. All right, everyone, if you're looking for some generic Marvel game, go check it out. You know, it's funny, I would find it hilarious if we were all wrong and this game blows up and is like the next coolest thing. I doubt it,
but I don't think we're wrong about the perception at all. But until it's played, like, you're right, it could be a good game, but like, I am looking at this and I'm like, listen, I know what the Hulk is probably going to play like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Laser beams coming out of the chest of Iron Man. I see it, I feel it, I already know.
Do you think he's a tank?
Hulk? Who, the Hulk?
Or do you think he's DPS? I don't know.
Yeah.
Right.
There's not like many places you can go with that.
What surprises are left?
Yes.
What surprises are left? Exactly.
I can't see myself playing it, even if it gets, even if it's well reviewed. I just don't think I'm going to play it. So,
yeah.
I'm like confident
it's like
in my
the Marvels, the movie. Like, I watched the Marvels the other day. It's a good movie. I really liked it.
Yeah.
Nobody watched Marvels. It. Nobody saw it. It doesn't matter.
And all superhero movies, those ships have sailed. It's over.
Superheroes are dead. Nobody cares. I also watched, I'm watching season 2 of Loki right now. It's really good. I really like it.
I did hear that was good. Yeah.
It is good. It's really good. I'm on like second to last episode. I'm dying to know what happens next.
Of which show?
Loki.
Loki.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
it's
been a while.
Just a shame. Because sometimes even when things are good, if it's overwhelmed by oversaturated market, then nobody's gonna care anyway.
Yeah They need to let it breathe, you know. Give us a year without this stuff, you know. Don't release anything Star Wars for like a year, you know. Then when it comes back, it'll feel like, oh, okay, awesome, like I'm here for this, you know.
I think that ship has sailed.
Trying to cancel my Disney Plus membership. It's really hard to. I don't know where I signed up from. I just don't know how to get out of it. They got me.
It's over. You're stuck.
You need that, like, subscription app that cancels your subscriptions for you.
I know, right?
Yeah. All right. Last bit of news. So, courtesy of Jeff Keighley of VGA and basically all things video game fame, we got a deeper look at, Ghost Story Games' new title, Judas. This is obviously being directed by famed BioShock creator Ken Levine. I was very excited for this game when it got announced at the VGAs. I'm a massive, massive BioShock fan, so I was very anxiously awaiting more information about this. And honestly, expectations have now raised even higher. I'm very about the way they're describing this game. Just to give a quick synopsis, the impression that people were getting was that it's like BioShock in space, right? But instead, it seems to be more of a roguelike game where you play as this this female protagonist, Judas, right? Is that her name? Yes.
Yes.
Judas is the girl's name. And you are progressing through this world where you're essentially developing these relationships with three other protagonists or main foils to your character. And based on the decisions that you make in the game and how you play through, it seems to either advance or reject your relationships with these three people. And the interplay between them is really what drives the narrative forward. And honestly, it seems super unique and really interesting. I mean, did you guys watch the gameplay trailer? Like, what did you guys think about it?
I did. He was describing the roguelike elements and the game's infinitely replayable. You can always it wants you to go back and see how these relationships change. I was getting a little bit of Deathloop vibes,
yeah,
from that type of description, which totally. isn't necessarily a bad thing. But that is where my head jumped to. But the gameplay itself looked incredible. And it did look, I mean, it's very, and Jeff Keighley said that right away, that it's very BioShock-esque in the way that you get, your guns and your magic hands and kind of stuff. But
even just the art style, the way the characters are animated, it's very, very BioShock, you know?
Mm-hmm. I'm excited. I mean, it looks awesome.
Yeah. Justin, what did you think?
So I did watch through the entire thing. So I've never played any of the other BioShocks, but I'll definitely say that he is very consistent with the art style that he knows, I guess. You know, it definitely feels the
same. You played any?
I haven't, no.
You've never played BioShock?
I've played it.
How did I hassle Liz into playing BioShock but not you?
That's what I'm saying.
No, I can't believe this hasn't come up yet.
It is necessary. It is on my necessary reading list.
We gave Liz such a hard time.
Dude, that game, okay.
Top 5 game.
Oh my gosh.
Top 10 game, we found out.
But another problem is that I already know what happens, so it kind of ruins it, you know?
No, man. It's atmosphere, dude. That game has atmosphere like no other game on Earth. It's so good.
I remember during college when I was watching some people play it, and I was like, this is scary. But the truth is that I should, honestly, but there's so much. Anyway, but I did watch the entire thing. I definitely know of what's the director's name again?
Ken Levine.
Ken, right? I do understand from an outsider looking in, Ken's ability to tell a story and build characters and create not deviations in the story, but I guess twists in the story that make you feel kind of hoodwinked or tricked, and it feels good because it's something that is genuine and authentic, right? That's why when I looked and he starts talking about specifically the factions, the characters that are vying for your attention, and then they're messing with you if they're not getting enough attention in certain ways, really strikes me as something that's interesting because it does, and he kept, this is kind of a buzzword, right? The idea of a dynamic storytelling of something changing as you make your decisions. I get it. We're all living in that world already, 20 years past it, you know? Yeah. But with the same sense, I feel like that, I like the idea of these characters that you get to know and then your choices, depending on which, are throwing points into each of them individually, and then they can sabotage you if you're not helping them enough in certain ways. That sounds That sounds really interesting to me. That does sound like people are going to be playing this game very differently, and the experience is going to be very different. So, like, all those things combined, and it not being, like, a sequel to anything, makes this game feel like my entry point to Ken's, you know, games, essentially. Mm. And I'm excited for it. I am excited for it.
Yeah. Liz, what were your thoughts?
It looks cool. it looks cool, honestly. Like, everything about it, the way they're talking about it aesthetically, I see the vision. It looks a lot like BioShock, but you know, I didn't love BioShock the way that Skirbo loved BioShock, mostly just because it's a little too creepy for me. And this game seems
I give you a lot of credit for putting in the work. You definitely did. So
I put in enough time to decide that I did not like it.
Yes,
I'm okay with that.
It's not for me.
Yeah, that is fair. That is the old college try.
Respect.
And I like the concept of it. I like the story and where it goes and the gameplay. I see where all that works. It's too creepy for me.
Yeah.
And you don't like dark corners.
I just get too scared.
And roguelikes, not your forte.
Yeah, they're kind of describing it.
BioShock is not a roguelike.
No, but yeah, they said like the new game is going to be played more like a roguelike.
They
made a point to say like every decision is going to be, you know, every playthrough could potentially be different depending on what choices you make and whatever.
Yeah. Alex, to your point, I didn't really get the Deathloop comparison, but I feel like that probably is very sound because, like, presumably you're trying to learn about these four or these other three characters and, like, their relationship to the world and you and each other. So it's like even if you're playing through the same game, like, multiple times to, you know, try to change stuff up, you as the player are going to understand more about those relationships and, you know, potentially be able to manipulate them, you know, as the storyline progresses, who knows?
And this is one of those things where it's like, because it's Ken Levine, I'm down for whatever. If another studio came out with this type of concept, I don't know if I'd be that excited about it.
Same.
But I do trust this guy's vision, so I really hope he's got, like, some good shit up his sleeve. But, like, you know... Yeah. I think Chow was saying, like, multiple, you know, dynamic storytelling, like, do the game over and over again, you know, play the way you want. I'm kind of sick of that kind of...
I remember Mafia 3. I mean, they were pushing the idea of the factions and your choices matter and dynamic storytelling and then the factions sabotaging each other.
Yeah.
But that game sucked.
I think there are different layers to it. And honestly, the comparison that this, like... I don't know, like, created in me that felt the most similar was, like, Hades, right? So it's like when you're playing Hades, you gain these, like, affinities towards certain gods or whatever, and then, like, if you choose one power over another, then they might quarrel with each other. So it's like I feel like there's some of that going on. I think more than anything, and, like, I don't know, like, this kind of comes off of the back of the Marvel conversation, but I just like that there's new stuff happening in the space. I feel like there's so much derivative content that's coming out in games just in general. I mean, we're literally in it right now. It's like, obviously I'm stoked to play Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, but it is characters and a story that I'm already familiar with, which, like, you know, I enjoy retro games. I enjoy playing the old stuff. Like, I like all of those things, but there's also something special about playing something totally new. Like, give me new characters, new story, new concept, like, that feels really exciting to me. So I look at a game like this and I'm just like, you know, it's almost like the North Star where I'm just like, okay, like there's stuff, there's new to look forward to, right? Like it's not somebody leaning on an old IP like, you know, Marvel or Wolverine or whatever the fuck, right?
And it's not called BioShock.
It's not called BioShock. It doesn't look like Overwatch. You know, it might look like BioShock from a gameplay perspective, but just the fact that it's like, totally new characters and like framing that in a new context, I'm like, okay, like that feels good to me. So
I have a feeling that the next year of games will most likely be very conservative moves on studios and publishers just because things are just looking so dire right now.
Totally.
People are getting fired and studios are getting closed down that like, I mean, we were even talking to some of the developers at PAX where a lot of them were kind of like talking about like, trying to find funding is like impossible. It's like so hard right now because they're choosing so very specific games that they think are surefire wins that will sell.
But, yeah. And how? Yeah,
so we're not going to get new art forms in for a while, probably.
It's funny though that like that is likely the move that everyone's going to be make, but or that everyone's going to be making, but. It's so funny to see, like, at the beginning of this year, a game like Helldivers just totally murder, like, right out of the gate. And it's like, for all intents and purposes, I don't think Sony had any faith in that game doing well. They barely marketed it at all. You know, there's, like, almost no fanfare when it came out. But then somehow it just captured the hearts and minds of so many people. And it's like, wow. So something different and original and fun, like, fun first, is leading the charge. Surprising, you know?
Yeah,
it's been a weird year. I think people are kind of desperate to play something different. Like look at POW World too. Yeah. You know, just like kind of a crap game, really. Like you put all the pieces together, it's not really. It's an early access kind of like mess, but the core was so cool, yeah. And people just latched onto it and you know really rode that out.
Yeah, but it seems like even stuff like we were talking about Dragon's Dogma before. It's like even a game like that looks really cool because it seems very novel. You know, it's like. A setting that people are familiar with, but the type of, again, buzzword, like organic storytelling seems to be very strong, you know?
Can we talk about Dragon's Dogma for like a quick second? Like, why are people so ready to jump on this like hate bandwagon on Dragon's Dogma 2?
I think it's the same thing. Like, I think gamers are sort of like, they want something to focus on. There's not a lot of stuff to distract them right now. There's not a lot of discourse right now because there's not a lot of games coming out. Like, I mean, Rebirth is huge, but you get Dragon's Dogma and there's just... And it is such a bad look to have microtransactions. There's no getting around that. Like, I think it's just a bad look having microtransactions in a single-player game. But I think a lot... They were reaching for a lot of other things to make it look worse than it actually was. And it's still not great, but it's not, like, the massive story that it... I don't know. When it came out, when we were at PAX, I was like, this looks terrible for them, but... I don't know. I think that's my headcanon for all of this.
Can I ask, because I'm not as familiar with Dragon's Dogma, like, what do the microtransactions do?
I think we discussed this on a previous, on last week's podcast, but the microtransactions are basically fast travel tokens. Like, if you want to fast travel around the world, you can buy, like, large chunks of whatever item is necessary to do that. And I think there was one other aspect that people... Oh, you can't, like, respec your character. Like, you need to pay some sort of currency to... Or change your character's appearance, rather.
I actually think you need to spend money to reset your...
Like, to restart the game.
They just patched the game, like, create a new character.
That's right, yeah.
They just patched that. Think actually, okay.
Yes, and I believe the other elements you like it's an item that you get in game, but they just create the option for you to purchase more fast travel tokens or whatever. And I think honestly, I think it's two things. I think gamers by default are like hateful, right? And I think what I mean by that is like I think the trigger for like certain individuals to like point fingers and be like, look how shitty this is, like they're trying to take advantage of people, whatever, is like very, very thin. And I think games media for the most part likes bad news because it gets people to click. So then if you like take this piece of bad news, you know, shine a light on it and then allow people to sort of like blow it out of proportion and really have that take the spotlight, it makes it seem like a bigger deal than it is. Like Capcom even released a statement afterwards that it's like, yeah, we have these things in here, but you definitely get them all in game. Like, cause I think the rhetoric was that you don't get them in game. And people were like, I can't believe they're charging for the ability to fast travel or whatever. And they're like, no, we're not. You can just do it in game. You know, and then I remember seeing videos of people put out being like, oh, without fast travel, you can get across the whole map in 30 minutes. It's like not a big deal.
They had a pretty measured response. They didn't sort of like panic. They were like, well, actually, you can do most of this, but we are going to patch this other stuff.
I think because I feel like a lot of times it's a worse look than it is in actual practice.
Like, I remember people being in all kinds of uproar about Shadow of War being so... having microtransactions. And, like, I played that whole game, second half, and I was like, I did just fine without any microtransactions. Like, it did not change the way that I played with the game at all.
My least favorite part...
matter. Like, and if somebody wants to skip to the end, like, sure, they can, but, like, the whole reason I'm playing the game is to play the game.
Yeah. Just, I think what it... in that game in particular, and what I hope that it's not in Dragon's Dogma, is I don't want to see a dollar sign, like a US dollar sign,
in-game
anywhere when I in game.
Yeah.
And I Shadow of War was bad about that, because they showed it to you often, like, open up whatever. So I hope Dragon's Dogma, like, it's a separate thing. Like, I just don't want that immersion breaking is too much for me. That really pisses me off.
The thing is I feel like most, and, like, honestly, I feel like, Liz, you'd probably have the most experience in this, but I'm under the impression that most single-player games, like, let's say, large-scale single-player games, have some elements like this. Like, if I were a betting man, I would pretty much guarantee that every Assassin's Creed game has some sort of, like, buy-to-level-up mechanic or something like that, you know? I have to imagine that exists.
Not buy-to-level-up, but it typically has...
cosmetics,
like,
crafting materials, like, or something.
A bathing suit, Altair.
I don't know. I don't even know if it does have that, but definitely
that's something.
Advertises the store. Like, it definitely wants to take you to the Ubisoft store all the time.
Yeah,
right.
I'm just gonna.
I'd say that's probably its most egregious act.
I'm gonna do a real time experiment. Assassin's Creed. What's a new one? Valhalla.
Yeah, I also like the fact that we have these computers and we can look up stuff.
So I'm just going to search Assassin's Creed Valhalla, right? So of the DLC packs that it's offering, so starter pack, some expansion. There's like 100 expansions to this fucking game. Jesus Christ. Okay, there's something called Helix credits that you can buy. There's something called base pack credits that you can buy. Like, so yeah, I mean, I don't know what you buy with Helix credits, but you can buy up to $100 worth of Helix credits. And I didn't hear anybody complaining about this in Assassin's Creed. Virtual currency.
I'm looking at it now. We're going down a rabbit hole.
Yeah.
I'm for this rabbit hole. I'm just going to watch your guys' faces while you do this, because I don't want to look at it. Exactly.
Extras, in-game currency, resources, and more. Yeah, so money, crafting materials, that kind
there
of
you
stuff.
Go.
Yeah.
What do you use the money for in that game? To buy crafting materials? To buy smelling salts?
To buy anything. Like, to buy anything you'd buy in a normal game. So sometimes it's armor, sometimes it's cosmetics, sometimes, like, there's a lot of cosmetics in Valhalla. Like, there's, like, 800 different hairstyles you can get, and tattoos, and... so there's a lot of that stuff, and there's a lot of, like, you know, consumables, arrows, bombs.
So we're gonna do one more search.
Saddles for your horse, you know, a new helm for your ship.
Okay,
I'm gonna do one more search. Another big single player game. I'm gonna do Far Cry 6, because I think this would fall into the same category.
Ubisoft,
like,
okay,
right. Okay.
Yeah, but see, that's what I mean. Like, I don't feel like you need... Like, I feel like I could... I had a full experience with that game without having those tokens. But if you want to, like...
Starter pack virtual bits, currency. I mean, every one of these games has...
skin off my back, as long as it doesn't fall into the Battlefront problem of, like, it's going to take you 50 hours to unlock this unless you pay for it. As long as it's a balanced game with that... as an extra, then just let people have it. Like, let people play on easy mode.
I guess people,
like,
also...
The studios need this money to keep, like they're crumbling.
Yeah.
Well, everybody's getting laid off. Like, it's not... It's, like, whatever they're doing now is clearly not sustainable. So, like, they need the money.
Well, this is why...
Sell plushes.
This is why I bring up the point where I think, like, you know... a default mode of being is to hold a pitchfork, you know what I mean, and, like, light a torch.
The default mode of being,
you know what I mean, where it's like, if there's something to really, like, get up in arms about, it's like the ability to do that is very quick, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see that.
But Despite all of that, I was going to say, it still looks really, really cool. Like, I am...
You use the troll as a bridge.
Yeah, that was a cool...
That's dope.
That was a cool scene. I just... I don't know. It's a shame that there are just so many games to be playing right now, because I want to play all of them. Yeah, I'm slowly... I mean, go ahead.
If Overlord... if Unicorn Overlord had microtransactions...
I wouldn't care, and I'd probably still play it.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't. Yeah, I probably wouldn't care if those microtransactions got me cooler units. Oh man, I'd probably be spending money. Actually, I don't know. I don't know.
I'd be pay to win at that point.
Do you think you guys?
All right, that's fine.
Do you guys ever feel like that? There's just, I don't know. I think
not enough money in my wallet.
No, I'm curious if you guys like feel any sort of shade of this, but recently I've been going through this this feeling of like I straight up don't have enough time to play the things that I want to play. Like, it's just not possible. Like,
dude, I'm not sure if you know who you're talking to, but the three of us are so confused as to how many games you can put away in the time frame that you have.
It's very like, but then how do you make the
and
choice?
You're saying this.
But how do you make the choice, right? Like, it's like I'm looking
at
my kid.
We have all hit that threshold a long time ago, and you have been the last holdout. Of,
dude,
like,
and I don't even have a.
You
right.
know, you got 30 minutes at 4 a.m. and you wake up, you got to play. I mean, you just make the time.
That
like
is
we're
what
not
it is.
Making the time.
That is what it is. I just need to make more time. It's just too many things came out too fast. You know. I look forward to the moment where there's like...
Last year was the biggest problem. This year looks manageable to me so far.
I don't really see a whole lot over the next couple of months. Like, Elden Ring's in June.
Okay. I mean, I feel like I'm currently sitting on about six games that I really want to play. And then, it's Stellar Blade, Elden Ring, and then whatever happens during fall season.
I forgot about... What is Stellar Blade?
It's the big booty game.
Demo,
honestly,
demo comes out on Friday.
I'm honestly most excited for Stellar Blade, mainly because of how great it looks.
Yeah.
Period.
There is a new demo that comes out on Friday, and I am thrilled to play the demo. And you know what the best part about the demo is? It's one of those you play and your progress transfers over. Love those.
That's pretty great.
Love those. Yeah. The best kind of demos. So, I'm stoked about that.
Yeah.
I just need to finish Final Fantasy and start churning through some other games.
Shift Up? That's the studio that made Stellar Blade.
So Shift Up is a Chinese developer that has made a number of mobile gacha games.
Do they specialize in like Stellar Blade? Big butts?
I'm certain if it's a gacha game, there are probably butts all over that thing. But from what I understand, this is their first like actual AAA venture. Everything else they've done have been like big time, like crazy successful gacha games.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So we shall see. Gotcha. We shall see what happens. I think this might be a good place for us to wrap up, though. Does anyone have anything else news-wise or life-wise or otherwise that you'd like to discuss before we sign off?
Well, we didn't get to talk about PAX at all.
Oh, wow. Completely skipping mind.
Whoops.
That's hilarious.
I mean, I'm not sure if we should do that now, but like we could probably wrap that up in the next 5 minutes.
I was
going to
say,
just telling Liz about our experience.
Is there much to share?
I think the fact that there wasn't much to share is the topic of conversation.
PAX was significantly weaker this year than it, I feel like, ever has been.
Go ahead, Alex. There weren't the big, Nintendo, Sony, Microsoft, Capcom. Square. Like, no one was... I mean, some of them had, like, minor presences, but it wasn't what it used to be at PAX. So it felt weak.
It's wild. It's wild. We went there last year and it was huge. It was booming, right? We showed last year. And like it had giant stuff. It had giant booths. Nintendo this year had like a last minute booth that apparently wasn't even part of the show floor until like the last couple of weeks, and it was just like some short person in an Eevee costume taking pictures with people. I don't even know what they were selling, honestly. It was very weird. Square was there, but they were only showing Final Fantasy XIV DLC that's coming out, and they weren't showing anything on Rebirth, which is hilarious, because I would have totally loved to take pictures with a Tifa or a Cloud. Like, why wasn't that there?
Mm-hmm. Maybe Larian was the biggest developer there?
Yep.
Larian's booth was pretty sick.
That was cool.
Yeah.
Oh, Liz, we have a gift for you. Totally forgot. When we see you the next time, we have a gift for you.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay. But the Larian booth is weird, too, because it's, like, this game has been out for a while now, and, like, you go there, and, like, people are waiting, scores of people are waiting in line to play Baldur's Gate. But, like, is that a good game to play at a show?
No. Probably not.
Also, news came out this week from Larian where they said, hey, guys, love Baldur's Gate, but we're not doing any DLC. We're done with Baldur's and anything D&D related. Yeah. We're moving on.
Good for them.
Good.
Yeah,
for
them. Crazy. Yeah,
they're very direct. I thought that was like, I'm cool with that.
Yeah,
we're done with it forever. We're not making DLC, and we're not making Baldur's Gate 4. So, crush your dreams.
don't drag your reputation through the mud just for a couple of extra bones, you know?
We did meet up with some good friends while we were there, and we did play a couple of cool games. I think the highlight was making Justin and Alex wait almost an hour in line.
Longer, to play, for sure.
Yeah, to play this game called Fallen Aces, which honestly I thought was very cool. I was like down with that.
It was cool. I don't know if it was worth an hour plus wait, but it was cool.
Yeah.
I think my highlight was seeing you talk to Guillermo, or whatever his name was,
Guillem.
The developer, Guillem, from 2014 when we had originally gone as TZR for the first time to PAX, and we had like a video interview of Justin interviewing this guy about his game, and now his studio is like, I think there's like a solid like 30 or 40 people in his studio, and he's also publishing other people's games now.
Yeah.
So that's sick. And that was literally 10 years ago. That was literally 10 years ago.
Yeah, that was pretty wild. That was Skirball a cool thing.
Also,
the first guy we talked to. It was a good icebreaker.
You recognize him from, like, across the convention. You're like, that's the guy from this video that we did 10 years ago. We're like, what?
And then my eyes. I realized how bad my eyes were.
This is one of my superpowers, guys.
it's
crazy.
Ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In general, I mean, it's cool to be in the atmosphere of PAX. Sorry, go ahead, Justin.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was nice. It was smaller. It was sad. It's definitely probably a good reflection as to like where the industry is state-wise. There was one other game that I thought was actually pretty interesting, and like as far as uniqueness goes, and this is a game that you originally found, Justin, which is called like Kind Words 2, which is just the sequel of Kind Words 1, which is also included in the game. It's the same game, but they added a bunch more stuff into it. But it's fascinating because it's basically like an empathy machine. And by that I mean, like, you're basically just talking to and sending out, like, requests to other players to just talk about how your days are going and, like, if you're having problems, and, like, people, like, empathize with you and talk to you about them or, like, give you advice. And it's completely, like, anonymous. It's basically, like, a slower form social media with anonymity.
Yeah.
Which is,
it's like an anonymous pen pal system, but with real people.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's real pen pals. But, they have some good music. It's like lo-fi music, which is kind of cool. So something to look into.
Yeah.
But otherwise, yeah, it was desolate. And I'm glad I only really had to go for like a day or 2 days. There wasn't really much to talk about. We went to the press room and I'm like, what are you guys even writing about?
Yeah.
Nature sort of intervened for me. And Skirba and I were going to stay there an extra day. And although we did leave a little early from PAX and went to a museum, the weather was like, you got to get out of there. You're not going to be able to go home if you don't leave right now.
Yeah, that was so random. It just like happened. It's like, okay, we just got to go.
Yeah, we just spent $30 to get into the Museum of Science. we were walking around, and then we just had to run.
Yeah, that was a fun moment though. I did enjoy going to that museum.
That was cool. Yeah, I mean, we got through a good chunk of it too.
Yeah, definitely. So that kind of put a pin in PAX for us, but you know, hopefully it sees a more of an upswing as time goes on. But for right now, I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe developers are just not feeling the need to be there as much anymore. You know.
Oh, one more addition to the PAX thing, which was really interesting. What was it called? Quiddic Games. The Saudi Arabian thing.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that was probably the biggest booth.
I've been wanting to talk to you guys about this, because like I did come home and I did start looking into more. Dude, I had no idea that Saudi Arabia is just spending money like it's going out of style on everything, weird ass things. Like, so this booth was the biggest booth at PAX, and it was just a bunch of random weird looking projected portals, and no one really understood what they were doing there, I suppose. And like, there was a line for like, I guess, free stuff where you walk around. There's no games to be played. And then we looked it up, and like, apparently it's like a giant esports stadium that they're building in Saudi Arabia. But then going back, Saudi Arabian money, apparently they're also building a Dragon Ball Z like theme park there and a whole bunch of other attractions. They're turning it into this whole thing. I don't know. But
yeah,
it's like a fourth of the major space in PAX.
Like, I'm definitely out of my depth talking about something like this, but it is kind of ironic that a Saudi funded startup was the biggest presence at PAX, considering right. that like Saudi money usually comes from the Saudi Public Investment Fund, which is run by the Saudi royal family. And like, I don't know if you know much about Saudi Arabia, but that is like, considering that PAX is probably one of the most inclusive and safe places for basically people of all walks of life, Saudi Arabia is quite the opposite of that. Like,
it's not that place. Like, yeah.
Like, women can't be women there. You know, like, it's a different type of place. So just ironic. But you know, maybe PAX was like, we need a big sponsor, so let's go.
Yeah.
You know?
Quite possibly.
Interesting stuff.
Right next to the Pokemon booth.
Yeah, actually, that was funny. Nintendo was there, but they had like this complete little side booth of nothing that was just kind of off to the side, and it was just showing the new Pokemon DLC. I don't know. It was something else. All right.
First time I've ever seen PAX go down, you know, from its previous year, I suppose.
Yeah. It seemed like it was starting to take steps in that direction after COVID.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah. I feel like it's been a rough recovery.
Yeah.
And
2020 was big.
Like a rough time for the industry as a whole. And this was just sort of
a reflection of that.
Yeah. Well, last year was pretty big.
Yeah, last year was all right.
There were a lot of people there, but. The biggest developer was Devolver there last year.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I didn't think it was, like, a huge turnout from the studios and the developers.
And Devolver wasn't even there this year.
Devolver was not there this year. Yeah.
Yeah.
What was that? New Blood was there with that kind of, like, second-tier sizing of a thing. And I've never heard New Blood before.
That's the Fallen Aces, right?
Yeah.
Fallen Aces, yeah. Which is actually kind of neat. But, anyway.
Pretty cool. All right, we're going to put a pin in it. Guys, this has been an excellent first attempt at this more digital version of the podcast. I hope our listeners enjoyed. Alex, thank you for thanks for coming on, man. Missed you. It's been a little while.
Missed you guys. Missed doing this. Appreciate you doing this new format for me. And I'll try to be on. I think we were thinking like, you know, once a month in this format. This has been awesome. Good to chat with you guys.
We'll just store up all those good gaming hot takes, and then just have one a big blowout at the end of each month.
Save all the good stuff for the one podcast.
Deal
Sounds good.
All right, well, thank you listeners for joining us in this week's episode. We'll be back next week for another episode of the Crit Rate podcast. Be sure to go to critrate.io to get your gaming profile, rate some new games, check out, honestly, my biggest thing, check out the upcoming games. We set up this page for the upcoming games that are going into the rest of this year, and it is probably the best way to see all of the games that are on the horizon for any gaming website. I would go toe-to-toe with any of them. It's awesome.
Wow.
Until then, thank you, Justin. Thank you, Liz. Thank you, Alex.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
And we'll see you all, Justin, on the next one. Bye, everybody.